our census is not designed to control the people. Our census is designed to give the people power, to allocate resources. It's the people's census. That's our census. It's our constitution. And it's at risk for political motivations, for lack of foresight, for lack of planning. Our census is being taken away from us. It's at the core of what this country is about. It's at the core of our democracy.
That's Arturo Vargas, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Arturo Vargas on why the 2020 census matters. How important is the 2020 census? Very. Its repercussions are profound. It's about power and money. The census, in theory, should be neutral, an objective collection of data. But like almost everything else these days, it is politically charged. The numbers determine representation in Congress and allocation of federal funds. The Census Bureau is part of the Department of Commerce. Every 10 years, it is mandated by the Constitution to count, enumerate is the exact word used, the country's population. In the 2020 census, the Trump administration has added a question about citizenship. A concern is that the addition of such a question will discourage immigrants from filling out the form. The Constitution says nothing about a distinction between citizens and non-citizens. A court case in New York will soon rule on this critical issue. Our guest today is Arturo Vargas. He's a nationally recognized expert in Latino demographic trends, electoral participation, voting rights, redistricting, and the census. He serves as the chief executive officer of NALEO, a national membership organization of Latino policymakers and their supporters. He has held various positions at the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. And he was senior education policy analyst at the National Council of La Raza in Washington, D.C. He spoke in Denver at the History Colorado Center.
I got started working on the census in 1988. This is my fourth census. It's done every 10 years. Do the math. I'm old. And Denver was one of my first stops. Back in the late 80s, when I was promoting the census, trying to get a full count of Latinos, I was working at MALDEF at the time, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. And then here we are in 2020. I've had a front row seat watching the Census Bureau plan for 2020. I'm a member, well, my organization is a member of the Census Bureau's National Advisory Committee on Racial, Ethnic, and Other Populations. And I've been on the Bureau's advisory committee since about 2000. So I've been a partner with them for the past three censuses, both being, you know, a supporter, a partner, an advisor, and a pain in the neck, trying to make sure they get it right. And we need to be pains in the neck with the Census Bureau. But they're friends. You know, Census Bureau people, they're good people. They're nerds. They're demographers. They're researchers. They're scientists. They work at the Bureau because they believe in the mission of the organization, of that agency. And I can tell you, this census is the one I am most concerned about, given everything that has happened leading up to 2020. And we, as Americans, have a responsibility to save this census, because it is at the core of our democracy. I don't take for granted anymore that people know why we do a census, because we don't teach our history. Mm-hmm. And too many people don't know how this country was established and how we decided to govern ourselves. Y'all remember 13 colonies, right? Okay, I'll take that laughter as a yes. 13 colonies became 13 states. And they all had to decide how are they going to govern themselves with the federal government. And so there was a couple of compromises that were made. One was that every state would get two senators. So you have two senators here, right? Bennett and Cory Gardner. And then you would get a member of Congress, members of Congress, according to how many people. So how do you determine that? You have to count the people. So that was the basis of the census. It's in the Constitution. Article 1 of the Constitution. But it wasn't always that way, that everybody got counted. Because when the census was established, and this is the part that sometimes we forget our history, that the census was born in the racism of the country. Because slaves, African-American slaves, the big compromise between the North and the South, because the North didn't want the slaves to be counted. Because they say, well, they're not people, they're property. And the South said, oh, no, no, no. You got to count our slaves because that's going to help us get members of Congress. So the compromise was, okay, we'll count them as 3/5 of a person. Native Americans living on reservations, they weren't counted at all. That was corrected by the 14th Amendment. 14th Amendment, and this is one of the takeaways, please, that I ask you to walk away with, what the Constitution says. Representatives, so members of Congress, shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state. Whole number of persons. It doesn't say the whole number of whites. It doesn't say the whole number of men. It doesn't say the whole number of property owners. It doesn't say the whole number of adults. It doesn't say the whole number of voters. And it certainly doesn't say the whole number of citizens. It says the whole number of persons. This is the only thing that the federal government does in which all of us are truly equal. We can be a transgender, homeless teenager, or a multimillionaire, a child that was just born, or someone who's 99 years old, each of them counts as one, if they're counted. This is a civil rights issue. This is a core to our democracy. This is how we apportion political representation. So the numbers are used to distribute members to Congress, protection of civil rights. The reason we collect racial and ethnic data in the census is that the only way to show if policies are having a disproportionate impact on a certain racial group is that we have data to show that in housing, in voting rights, in employment. It's core to the protection of civil rights. Billions of dollars get appropriated every single year. The federal government sends billions of dollars to the 50 states, our tax dollars, coming back to us according to how many people are in our states and communities. And then policymakers and all of you make decisions looking at numbers. So know that all of our decisions have been flawed because there has never been an accurate census. And we got to do something about that. Okay, here's just a geographic representation of distribution of members of Congress. This is what the United States looked like after the 1950 census. New York already was holding on to 43 congressional seats. California's catching up with 30. And there's Colorado with 4. Members of Congress after the 1950 census. And this is after the 2010 census. See, Colorado now has 7 members of Congress. You see the red and pink states? Those are all states that lost members of Congress because their population either shrank or didn't grow as fast as the states in blue. And there's one red state in the South. That's Louisiana. It lost a congressional seat. Anybody want to guess why? Hurricane Katrina. There was massive demographic displacement after Katrina. People left Louisiana. Many of them moved to Texas. And you know what? With that went a congressional seat from Louisiana to Texas. That's why Texas picked up. That's part of the reason why Texas picked up 4 congressional seats after the last reapportionment. So you see, California held on to 53. New York and Florida now are on par with each other with 27. And chances are that New York is going to lose 1 or 2 seats. after 2020, and Florida may probably pick those up. So Florida is going to probably be the third most populous state after this next census if everybody gets counted. And here's an example of what are the programs that actually use census data to distribute funds. Using decennial census in the formulas to determine how much money should go to each state. And it's for everything. It's for everything. It's for health care, for Medicaid. It's for SNAP, Supplemental Assistance Program, for, you know, to feed children and families. Highway construction, Section 8 housing vouchers, transportation programs, Head Start. All the programs that you care about, because many of them are designed to serve vulnerable communities, depend on census data. And the irony is that it's a vulnerable community, so often don't get counted. So, again, we need to do something about make sure we have an accurate and safe census. But it's also, it affects everybody. I mean, if you want to build more highways, you got to count everybody. One of the issues that we've been very concerned about at NALEO is the undercount of Latinos overall. The Census Bureau will tell us that in 2010, 1.5% of Latinos weren't counted. They say something called net undercount. And when you talk to the Census Bureau, they'll probably talk about net undercount. Net undercount does not represent the number of people missed. The word omissions, when the Census Bureau talks about omissions, that's people missed. So there were actually 2 million very young children, ages 0 to 4, omitted from the 2010 census. How do we know that? Dr. William O'Hare, the foremost demographer in the country today on data on children, he's an advisor of the Census Bureau. He works for the Annie Casey Foundation. He did something called demographic analysis, where he took the 2010 census data set and compared it to actual births, actual deaths, and actual migration records. And he accounted for undocumented migration as well. So using hard data, he compared the 2010 census. And when he was done, he was missing 2 million children ages 0 to 4. The net undercount, because there were some children ages 0 to 4 who were counted twice, but not the same ones who were missed. So the net undercount of children was 1 million. He called me when he was done with his analysis because he thought NALEO would be interested in knowing that of those 1 million children missed, 400,000 were Latino children. We'll never have an accurate count of Latinos if we don't count our babies. These are children ages 0 to 4. Okay, the 2020 census is a year and a half away. If children 0 to 4 are at most at risk of being missed, these children started being born 2 years ago. Think about it. We know where they are. We, you know, they're in our hospitals. They're in our prenatal programs, in our early childhood programs, in our Head Start programs. We know where they are, and they're going to be missed again in 2020 if we don't do something about it. And that's a 7.1% undercount rate for Latinos compared to 4.3%. Other populations that are severely undercounted include African Americans, poor people, immigrants, Native Americans, renters, immigrants. All these vulnerable populations don't get counted as well as other populations. All right, so one takeaway, power, right? Political representation, money. That's what the census is about. It's about power and money. And at its core, it's about who deserves it, who has it, who gets to keep it, and who gets it. So don't think that the census is just this really nerdy activity that happens every 10 years and, you know, somebody walking around with a clipboard checking off names and counting people. This is at the core of some real heavy stuff, power and money. So it's always been a controversial issue and at the core of our Constitution. Okay, so 2020 census, here we go. It's 2 years away. So for the past 10 years, and it takes that long to plan a census for the Bureau. In fact, already the Bureau has a committee that's organizing the 2030 census. And I'm part of an advisory group that is trying to set up how do we do 2030 in a very different way. I won't be around to do it, believe me. I'm going to be retired by then. But I'll advise them today. So the 2020 census, the Bureau has been trying to completely redo the census in a way that would make it more cost-efficient and more streamlined, and they've been doing some great thinking about how to make that happen. And they have had some major innovations that they are planning to do. Two things about that. One is there will be some innovations in the 2020 census, but number two, many of the ideas that the Bureau have been planning to do and what they were studying and doing research on, they are not going to be able to do. Because in the past year, the Department of Commerce and the White House have changed their plans, have imposed upon the Census Bureau a different agenda and a different operation. So now what the Bureau is going to do is carry out an operation in 2020 that it hasn't been planning for the past 10 years. Now, part of that is Congress's problem or fault, because Congress, for the past 4 years, has not given the Census Bureau the resources it needed to ramp up for 2020. And as a consequence, the Bureau has had to delay, modify, or cancel basic elements of its preparations for 2020. So in some ways, it's going into the 2020 census blindly because it doesn't know exactly how everything's going to work because it hasn't had the opportunity to fully test everything. And that's because Congress hasn't funded the Bureau enough. Now this year, for FY19 that just started September 1, the Bureau is a little flush, but in our opinion, it doesn't have enough resources to catch up based on what it lost in the past 3 years, so it's ramping up. The biggest change for 2020 is that Bureau wants to make this a high-tech census, right? You've heard this. It wants everybody to respond online. Now, on the one hand, it makes sense because many of us do things online. Those of you looking at your laps, I know what you're doing. You're texting. We live online, so it sort of makes sense that we have the opportunity to complete our census forms online. So there's some promise there, but there's also some pearls. The danger being, one, we know people are scared about what's going to happen if you submit your personal information online. What are the Russians going to do with my census information? No, seriously. What are the Russians going to do with it? And there's a fear. Is it going to get hacked? I mean, the federal government has been hacked already a couple of times. So while it makes sense, we know that there's some dangers there. Administrative records. This is something that the Bureau doesn't talk much about, but we should know about what the Bureau's planning to do in terms of administrative records. Administrative records are IRS, Medicaid, Social Security, all these other databases that exist that the federal government maintains about us. Now, some people will say, why is the Census Bureau asking me all these questions? Because they already know everything about me. Why are they being so nosy and imposing upon my time when they could just go to X data set and get the information they need? Well, the fact is, the Bureau says, yeah, the public is right. The federal government does know everything about us. So how can the Census Bureau be smart and go to these other data sets to get information to complete some of the information that it doesn't get from us, from forms that are not returned or are returned incomplete? So the Bureau has been trying to study this and research this to determine which data sets it's going to use to complete the count when those of us who decide not to return our census forms or we return them incomplete aren't cooperating. But what the Bureau hasn't yet decided is exactly which data sets it's going to use and for which purposes. So we're keeping an eye on this because one of the things we're concerned about is we want to make sure they get it right And some of these data sets are not complete. You know, by definition, if you're not authorized to work in this country, you shouldn't have a Social Security number, right? So you're not on the IRS data set. And we know that some of these data sets are not complete when it comes to recent births. And remember, it's our babies who are most likely to get missed. And some of these data sets don't collect information on race or ethnicity. The IRS doesn't care if you're black, white, Asian, Native American, or Latino. They just want your money, right? So we're keeping an eye on this. So we need to know what's going on. The Bureau was going to redesign the way it asked all of us if we're what our ethnicity and race is. They had spent 10 years researching how to get into the psyche of the American public so that we understood what was being asked when the Bureau asked us, what is your ethnicity, what is your race? 10 years they spent researching this, and they had come up with a new way of doing it, and this administration put the kibosh on those plans with no explanation. And so now they're going to go forward, and I'll show you in a little bit, with an imperfect way of collecting race and ethnicity data. Reduction in the number of local census offices. All of these innovations that the Bureau has been doing has been because Congress told the Bureau in 2011 that the next time they do a census, they have to do it without spending a penny more than they spent in 2010 in $2010 dollars. That meant that the Bureau has had to figure out an operation that was going to cost $5 billion less to do. Well, because the Bureau didn't fund the Census Bureau, and because the Bureau has had to pause, delay, and cancel many programs, the fact is that this is now on track to, in fact, be the most expensive census. Because, what is it, pennies foolish? You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what's happened. The Congress didn't give the resources to the Bureau enough so that the Bureau could do this effective streamlined census. But because of high tech, because of the online process, the Bureau is shrinking the workforce that it's going to use for the 2020 census. And this is going to be something where all of us need to get involved. We need to help the Bureau find good people to work there. And it's going to be tough this year because of the historic unemployment, low unemployment rate that we have in the country right now. There aren't that many unemployed people as compared to 2010. 2010 happened through the Great Recession. Very high unemployment rate. I mean, the Bureau was hiring PhDs to be enumerators. They had no problem having a highly skilled workforce. Already the Bureau is telling us that they can't find enough good people. So that's something we need to help the Bureau to do. In 2010, there was a census office in every single congressional district. So that meant that Colorado had at least 7 offices in 2010. As of November of last year, there were only 4 offices planned for Colorado. In Aurora, Colorado North, I don't know what that means. It may mean something to you, but it's in the memorandum that I copied. Colorado Springs and Denver. These are the offices for the 2020 census. You have a regional office here in Denver, in Lakewood, that's in charge of 12 states. But these are the 4 offices that are going to be in charge of counting Coloradans. So when the Census Bureau comes later today, let's ask them, are these offices opened? Who's managing them? What's the staffing plan for this? How many people are you going to hire? And where are you going to hire them? Rural communities are going to be particularly affected by the lack of money. Colorado has a lot of rural areas. Originally, the Bureau was planning to do something called Update Enumerate. Update Enumerate means that the Bureau was going to hire census enumerators to go into the rural areas of the country, confirm the addresses, and then enumerate people right then and there and count the people who live there. That was the plan. But because the Bureau has been starved and they needed to cut funding, they will do something called update leave. Update leave means that they will hire enumerators, they will go update the address, and then leave behind a census package. And cross your fingers, hoping that the people who live there are going to fill it up. That's the way rural communities are going to be counted in 2020. And this affects Colorado significantly. because of your rural communities. Update Leave is the operation to count your rural communities. So when we do our outreach and we tell people it's time to get counted, if they're in rural communities, we need to tell them, you know, look for that package that someone's going to leave behind on your doorstep, because that's your census form. Dress rehearsal. Anybody here in the arts? Any actors? Yeah? All right. When you do a dress rehearsal, it's as if it's the real thing, right? Just without the audience. You don't stop. You replicate everything exactly as if it's the real thing. And that's what the Census Bureau does every year ending in 8. This is the year ending in 8, 2018, in time for 2020. The Bureau had planned to do 3 dress rehearsals. Providence, Rhode Island, in the county in the state of Washington, and 2 counties in the state of West Virginia. So an urban area, a mixed area with a large Latino agricultural population in Washington State, and a rural area in West Virginia. But because of lack of funding, the Bureau had to cancel Washington and West Virginia and only did the dress rehearsal in Providence County, Rhode Island. And in fact, it didn't even call it a dress rehearsal. It called it an end-to-end test, because all that the Bureau had money to do was to see if the computers were going to work. There was no communications program. There was no advertising program. There was no partnership program. All the things you would think that would happen in the census didn't happen. So when I say that the Bureau is going into 2020 blindly, it's because it hasn't fully tested everything. Even the final test that just wrapped up in Providence County, Rhode Island, was not a complete dress rehearsal. Ban on hiring work-authorized non-U.S. citizens. This is something that's a little murky still. Census jobs are federal jobs. And if you're going to work for the federal government, you need to be a U.S. citizen, unless there's some kind of waiver where the federal government determines that we need your skills, and so we will waive the fact you're a non-citizen. In the past, the Census Bureau has gotten a waiver because there are some areas of the country where languages are spoken, where there are not enough citizens who speak those languages, so they would hire work-authorized non-citizens, you know, people with green cards, people who are here legally and authorized to work. The Bureau would be able to hire them so they can go into those neighborhoods where Spanish only is spoken, or Hmong, or Vietnamese, or Korean, or Farsi. They needed to hire those language skills. Census Bureau has been told, nope, only U.S. citizens can be hired. Now, I say it's murky because there's a loophole in the law that says the Census Bureau can hire non-citizens as translators. So now we're pushing the Bureau. This is part of being the pain in the neck, pushing the Bureau to say, okay, you need a lot of translators. So you better get this waiver, because there are some communities in the country where if you go in there and the enumerator only speaks English, they're not going to be able to get the information from those households. So this is something where we got to push the Bureau. So when the Bureau comes in, let's ask them, what's the plan for hiring a culturally and linguistically competent workforce? And then the census questionnaire itself has been radically changed. And you've heard about the citizenship question. I'll get into that. But I also want to talk about the race and ethnicity question.
You're listening to Arturo Vargas on why the 2020 census matters. This is Independent Alternative Radio.
As I mentioned, the Bureau had planned to radically change how it asked all of us what our race and ethnicity was. They were going to do a combined question. In essence, it was going to ask, what is this person? And then all the options were listed. White, Latino, African American. There were 9 Asian checkoff boxes, Native Hawaiian or Native Alaskan, Native American, Native Alaskan, Native Hawaiian, other Pacific Islander. There was going to be a new category called MENA, Middle Eastern North African. And then there was the catch-all, some other race. People in the MENA community, the Middle East, people from Morocco and Egypt and the Sudan and Syria and the Arab countries, people who trace their heritage there for the past 30 years have been clamoring for the Census Bureau to give them a category. Because the Census Bureau says, if you're from Egypt or Morocco or Saudi Arabia, you are racially white. And these people are like, no, 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 no. We're not white. And the verse says, yes, you are. And so these people were not counted as being from that part of the country. So we work quite a bit with stakeholder organizations from these communities. And they would say, you know, if you look at the data from Detroit, that has the largest concentration of people from the Middle East, you can't tell how many Middle Easterners are poor because they're in the white category. You can't tell how many are children, Middle Eastern children, or because they're in the white category. You can't disaggregate the data. So they have been clamoring for 30 years, and they got right to the finish line, and the rug was pulled out from under them when the Census Bureau decided there will be no MENA, not the Census Bureau, the Department of Commerce decided no MENA category. So this is what the Bureau is going to do in 2020. It's going to ask everybody, is this person of Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin? This is the question that's been on for many years. And there are five checkoff boxes. No, not Latino or Hispanic. Then you go to the next question. But if you are, like me, you can check off yes, Mexican, yes, Puerto Rican, yes, Cuban, or yes, other Latino. So if you're Guatemalan or Dominican or Hondureño or Argentinian, you have to write in that group. But only one. If you're both Mexican and Puerto Rican, you got to decide who you love more, your mother or your father. Because the Bureau says you can only check one box. So that's one problem with this question. Okay, so then you go to the next question. What is this person's race? So if you check no Latino, then you just go and you can check white, black, American Indian, Alaska Native, some Asian checkoff boxes, or some other race. The problem, especially for Latinos, is that after I check off Mexican and I go to the next question, what is my race? What are you talking about? I just told you what my race is. I told you I'm Mexican. And the Bureau says, no, being Latino is your ethnicity. Now tell me what your race is. And so as a consequence, about half of all Latinos in the country check off a box called some other race. The problem with that is that OMB, that has decided how many races are in the country, says there is no such thing as some other race. In fact, many Middle Easterners end up checking off the some other race box too. About 95% of the people who checked off some other race are Latinos because they checked off the Latino box. What the Bureau has to do has to go back and impute, using algorithms, a racial category for those some other race respondents. The Bureau wanted to get out of this business, but was prevented being able to do so through, I believe, some political agenda. There are other issues we got to keep an eye on. There's no permanent director at the Census Bureau yet. Someone's been nominated. He hasn't yet. He did have a hearing, but hasn't had a vote. He probably won't get voted into either the lame duck session of this Congress or in the next Congress. So right on the eve of the census, will there be a permanent director? The GAO, the General Accounting Office, has designated this census a high-risk federal activity. Well, that's no surprise. It does it every 10 years, except this time around, it did it much earlier in the cycle because of all these innovations. Talked about the public trust and talked about the funding situation, all affecting the census. But the biggest threat now that you've all heard is that the Department of Commerce has ordered the Census Bureau to add a citizenship question to the decennial census. Now, what's the problem with this? The last time the Census Bureau asked everybody in the country, are you a citizen, was in 1950. After the 1950 census, the Bureau determined that it wasn't collecting accurate data about citizenship by asking the entire population, are you a citizen? So beginning in 1960, they asked the citizenship question on a sample survey. Those of you old-timers will remember short form versus long form. The citizenship question was on the long form in 1960, 70, 80, and 2000. It was a long form because it asked a whole bunch of questions. After the 2000 census, the Census Bureau created something called the American Community Survey, where that sample survey goes to 3.5 million households every year. And this is, has anybody gotten this survey? I know I have. This is the survey where it asks everything about your household. Not just your name, your gender, your age, your ethnicity, and your race. They ask you, how many hours do you commute? What's your level of education? What language do you speak? Do you have any water? How many toilets do you have? Are you a citizen? So it's one question of about 50, and it's on a sample. But now the Bureau wants to put, is the Commerce Department is ordering the Bureau to put this on the decennial census without any testing of what the impact is going to be. And it's doing it in this current environment. We know that this is not a comfortable time for immigrants in the United States, right? We know what the government is telling us. I'm going to cancel DACA. I'm going to cancel temporary protected status. I'm going to change the rules on public charge. We're going to build a border wall. Are you a citizen? What is that going to do to our communities when they get that census form? I don't know necessarily the motivations for why this question has been added now. I have some pretty good guesses. I don't want to get into politics, so I won't. But this is now subject to litigation. There are 6 lawsuits pending in the country, 2 in New York, 2 in Maryland, and 2 in California, just challenging the citizenship question. There was a very important decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Secretary of Commerce himself said that he made the decisions, Wilbur Ross. And he said that he was responding to a request by the Department of Justice for more complete citizenship data so that the Department of Justice could enforce the Voting Rights Act. That's what he testified before Congress, and that's what he has told the public about why he decided to add a citizenship question. Well, in litigation, it has come out that, in fact, it was his idea all along. He's the one who asked the Department of Justice, hey, can you guys ask for this question? And so they did. And they didn't want to because they were busy with the Comey affair and dealing with other issues. But he got the Department of Justice to ask the question. And then he went through this bogus 3-month process of doing research. He spoke to 24 experts. I was one of them. I spoke with him on March 13th of this year, where he asked me, we had a telephone conversation, about what I thought of adding a citizenship question. You can imagine what I said. He told me, I'm only doing this because the Department of Justice has asked me to consider asking this question. He lied. I know that much. I may not know motivations, but I know that he has been untruthful to the public. So now the Census Bureau, depending on what happens with the litigation, it may try to do something different in legislation to remove this question. But we have to prepare ourselves for a census that will have the citizenship question on. And it's going to make this census very difficult to complete. An interesting thing, it just doesn't affect immigrants, by the way. MALDEF and the Asian Americans Advancing Justice lawsuit, this is one of the ones in Maryland, they're representing Native Americans in this lawsuit. And what they're challenging is that for many Native Americans who live on reservations, their citizenship is their tribe, their Indian nation. And so asking them, are you a U.S. citizen, is irrelevant to them. And so this isn't just about undocumented immigrants or people from Mexico or Honduras or caravans. This affects lots of folks, and it affects mixed households. You can have a Latino household where you have U.S. citizens who are born here, people with green cards, people with DACA status, maybe somebody who's undocumented. Will that household fill out a form where everybody has to answer the question, are you a citizen? You can imagine what our challenge is going to be. So what's our position? People are asking me, so what do we tell people? Well, first of all, don't panic, because we don't yet know if the citizenship question will be on. Let's see what happens to litigation. Let's see what Congress does. The deadline is about June 2019, when the Census Bureau literally has to go to print on the census form. That's about when the Bureau must know exactly what the questionnaire will look like. For now, we are not telling people leave it blank. We are not telling people just mark yes, because we don't know what the Bureau is going to do with forms that are returned with that question left blank. We don't yet know. We don't know if that's going to trigger an enumerator visit. We don't know if that's going to trigger the Bureau going to some administrative record, the Department of Homeland Security, or United States Citizenship and Immigration Service databases to try to find somebody's citizenship. We don't know. We don't know because the Bureau doesn't know. Ron Jarman, the acting executive director, spoke at our national conference in June, and I asked him the question point blank, what are you going to do if the question is left blank? And he said, we don't know because we weren't planning on having this question added. So they have formed a working group at the Census Bureau to actually figure out what the protocols are going to be. So we don't yet have an answer for the community about what to do with that question. And know that not answering the census is a federal offense. Telling somebody not to answer the census is probably a federal offense. So let's be very careful as advocates and defenders of our community about the strategies we use. So stay tuned, because this is unsettled territory. And we're doing messaging at Naleo to try to figure out how do we talk to our community about this. We did a survey of 1,600 Latinos. We did focus groups in LA, in the Rio Grande Valley, and in North Carolina to try to figure out how do we talk to our community about the census and what are they saying if we ask them to be citizens. Well, not surprisingly, when we told people the Bureau's going to ask if you're a citizen, the people who were citizens said, well, I don't have a problem answering that question, but nobody in my community is going to answer it. This is the kind of stuff that we got, the stuff we got to deal with. We asked them, how do you want to answer the census? Do you want to do it online? Do you want to do it on paper? Do you want to do it by phone? 75% of the people we surveyed said, I want to fill out the census form on paper. Okay, the Bureau is going to push us all to do it online because it wants to save money. But we don't have to do it online. This is a little secret. The Bureau's not really telling us. Because if you don't respond, the Bureau's going to mail you 5 times. Every house is going to get 5 mailings from the Bureau. By the 4th mailing, if you don't respond, you're going to get a paper form. So as we do our outreach, if people want to say, I just want to fill it out on paper, then part of our strategy is going to be, let's just wait until you get it in the mail on paper, and then we can help you fill it out. If you want to fill it out online, you can do that too. You can do it anytime. But people are telling us they feel more comfortable on paper. I want to get here to the messages that we tested. We tested 4 messages. This is, again, with the Latino audience. We tested, you need to participate in the census because it's required by law. You need to participate in the census because it's your civic duty. You need to participate in the census because it benefits your community. Or you need to participate in the census because this is your way to stand up to Trump. So it's a resistance message. We tested these 4 messages. The resistance message was the least effective. The most effective was you need to participate in the census because of the benefit to your community. So as we gear up at Naleo with our campaign, and I hope Coloradans, as you gear this up, what we have to hit home is have people understand how important the census is for programs, for those health programs, those clinics, those schools, the highway construction, all of that. That's what people have told us is convincing to them to participate in the census. Messengers. It's also important who says it. I work for the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. I'm going to tell my members who are appointed and elected officials, nobody believes you. That's what people told us, that elected officials are not very credible when it comes to this stuff. Who they would believe? Nurses, doctors, teachers, first responders, all of those were credible messengers. So when you think about who needs to go out there and be telling the public the census is important for our community, it needs to be those messengers. Okay, I'm just waiting for someone to say, oh, let's do a PSA with Lin-Manuel Miranda. No, that's not going to work. Okay, and we need to prepare, folks. These are just some ideas that we have. Advocate for state and local funding for census outreach. Colorado, got to get on the ball, people. State of California, they know what's at stake here. California has 53 congressional seats they want to hold on to. They have a huge immigrant population. They know exactly the risk of not counting every Californian, which is why the state government has allocated $100 million for its own statewide census outreach program. Colorado, not a penny. You need to talk to your legislature. You need to talk to your governor and say, Colorado has something at stake here. Power and money. And every person missed means we get that much less of our share of political representation and resources to benefit our community. We have to invest in this effort. We can't just leave it up to the feds. That's one of the things I tell people. We're doing a campaign on this. But the thing I always want to remind people is that, you know, the United States did not invent the census. Okay, censuses have been done throughout the history of the world. Caesar decreed that there shall be a census, but the reason Caesar was doing a census was so that he could tax people, so he could control the population. That's why governments have done censuses until our government decided to do a census. Because our census is not designed to control the people. Our census is designed to give the people power, to allocate resources. It's the people's census. That's our census. It's our constitution. And it's at risk for political motivations, for lack of foresight, for lack of planning. Our census is being taken away from us. It's at the core of what this country is about. It's at the core of our democracy. And we have only about, 16 months left to do something about it. Because if we are Americans, if we believe in our Constitution, we have to take this into our own hands. And we have to stand up for the fundamental values of this country, that all persons are equal in our society, and we all count. Thank you.
Why are kids 0 to 4 undercounted?
It's a very good question, and we really don't know why. The Census Bureau has been doing research to try to understand complex households, complex families. We ourselves have incorporated that question into our research. One of the troubling things that we learned from our survey is that we asked the respondents, do you have children under 17 in your household? Do you have children younger than 5 in your household? And those who answered yes, we asked them, are you going to include them on your census form? And about 11% of them said no. We weren't able to tease that out. The Partnership for America's Children is about to do more research, and this is one of the things they're going to get at, is what are the attitudes or what are the beliefs that adults have that they're not wanting to include all their children on the census forms. So we're going to learn some more of that research. We also know that, you know, there's a lot of assumptions as to why children may have been missed. In 2010, it was a paper form only, and so there was only so much room on the form. And if you remember, we were in the middle of the Great Recession, and there was many families lost their homes, and people were doubling up. So it may have been something as simple as they ran out of room on the form. And so they started with the adults, and they left off the children. I mean, it may have been that. We had a convening with child advocates, and people were in LA County, and some of those who work with foster children were saying, well, chances are foster children were missed because the foster parent probably thought, well, the child should be counted at the home of the biological parent, and the biological parent saying, well, my child is in a foster home, so they're going to be counted over there, and nobody counts the child. So it could be a whole number of reasons, but we really need to get at this more. interesting fact, there are populations that are overcounted, and one of those populations is white women.
White women?
White women.
Wow.
Are overcounted in the census.
This question, I know there has been controversy about how the LGBTQ population is being counted. What are the latest views on this topic?
One of the questions is, how does this person relate to the person filling out the form? And that's called the relationship question. And you can answer same-sex married partner or unmarried partner. And by knowing the genders, we'll know if it's a same-sex household or an opposite-sex household. However, let's say you're a gay man living by himself. There's no way to identify yourself as gay or straight. There is no, the acronym SOGI, the Bureau is great on acronyms, sexual orientation and gender identity. There is no identifier for on the census form. Only for those same-sex couples will we get some sense of what that population size is.
So another question about one of our hard-to-count communities is, how can the homeless population participate if they do not have an address?
Yeah, there will be, and I don't remember the exact date, but there will be a day in late March where there will be a homeless count, and that's when enumerators will go out and try to find people in transitional living situations or, you know, under freeway underpasses, you know, in parks or wherever, homeless encampments where homeless may be, and to count them that night. There'll be a homeless operation, homeless count operation.
How will the enumerating approach work with people with disabilities or others that do not have access to a computer?
And this is some of the challenges that we have because of how the census, actually Census Bureau conducts the enumeration. It's an enumeration of households, mail out, mail back, or mail out and return online. So people who are challenged in any way with that operation are subject to being missed. And this is where outreach strategies are so important, where community is so important, that we know where these vulnerable communities are. We need to make sure that they are aware and that they're prepared, we're prepared, to make sure they don't get missed. So people with disabilities and people who are homeless, people who are not literate, for example, will not just computer literate, but people who may not be able to read or write at all. All of these are going to be barriers to being counted.
What can philanthropy do to fund an unfunded mandate to make the census count?
Nationally, national funders have gotten organized much earlier in this cycle than in previous censuses. Usually, foundations will start paying attention in the years that end in 9, like in 2009, like, oh, they start making some grants. No, it's too late. But they started organizing themselves in 2015 and 2016. And so there's a group of national funders, and I know regional funders as well. But this is where I think the philanthropic community in Colorado could really play a pivotal role in building the capacity of CBOs here in Colorado to participate in the census. But let's also be smart, because we know that the same groups that are going to be doing census are doing voter education, are doing civic participation strategies, citizenship strategies, making sure people are connected to services. How do we use this moment where we know there'll be some resources for the nonprofit sector to get people to be counted in the census, to leave something behind and you know, look towards the future so that we have more capacity, more infrastructure in our nonprofit sector? How do we use this as an opportunity to build and not just a one-time event? I just would reiterate that the census really is the foundation of our democracy. And the 14th Amendment that abolished slavery, when it was being drafted, Congress did consider using the term citizens instead of persons. But it rejected that because of what the census was about. It was about counting all persons, all people. And I know there are people in the country who don't believe that everybody should be counted. But that's what the Constitution requires. And we need to remind ourselves what our supreme law of the land requires of us and why. Because it's foundational to our form of democracy.
That was Arturo Vargas on why the 2020 census matters. He spoke in Denver. Arturo Vargas is an expert in Latino demographic trends, redistricting, voting rights, and the census. He serves as chief executive officer of NALEO, a national membership organization of Latino policymakers and their supporters. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We are independent and part of the nonprofit Rise Up. We are supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature progressive voices from Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz to Chris Hedges. We have an extensive archive of programs. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. Special thanks to Together We Count and the Rose Community Foundation. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.